Welcome, darling change makers, to another podcast episode in the Leadership Beyond Genders series. And I am really excited to invite you to step into empowerment with me today with Sandra D'Souza, our esteemed guest in the Changemakers podcast Leadership Beyond Gender series that I've been recording as I'm writing my book. I'm going really deep into this concept. Tell you a little bit about Sandra. She is an advocate for women's rights since her teenage years. Her journey is marked by remarkable achievements. She is honored with the Edna Ryan Award for Mentoring in 2008 and a final for the NSW Women Awards in 2018. Definitely a trailblazer in gender equality. Sandra's impact has been global, from pivotal roles within the NGO business and professional women to be a beacon of change in the Commonwealth Business Council. As the sole Australian participants in the Nasdaq Spring 2021 Milestone Makers Program, she showcased her commitment to reduce inequalities on the Nasdaq. Ooh, tower in Times Square. Yeah, I've seen the picture. You gotta see that too. Sandra's initiatives include launching ELECT on an International Women's Day in 2019, a platform dedicated to bridging the gender gap in business. The subsequent introduction of ELECT Star highlights companies excelling in gender balance within boards and senior leadership teams. Her book, From Bias to Equality, Equity, sorry, balance,
Equality.
equality, yeah, that's what I thought, perfectly aligns with the Leadership Beyond Gender series, I think. She's a dynamic speaker and a thought leader, and Sandra's expertise in social entrepreneurship, gender equality, diversity, and inclusion shines through everything that she does. Just Google her, you see what I mean. Now, I want to join you and join us to explore her insights and transformative journey towards dismantling biases for a more equitable future. So, Sandra, welcome.
Thank you. That's quite an intro. I don't know what to say. I'm very honored to be here on your show.
Well, thank you for being here. I've been really excited to have this conversation with you because I feel like I'm talking to a sister in crime, trying to change this
Yes.
system. I just want to start by asking you a question that I ask everyone. And what is, when you hear the word leadership beyond gender, what comes up in your mind?
Well, for me, I guess with my lens and the work that I'm working through is it's almost like it's leadership regardless of gender. It's very much that it's anyone who can aspire to be in that role and capable of being in the leadership role, and that there are no challenges for anyone regardless of their gender to be able in that role. And the reality is that's not the case. That's why I guess I've written the book, and here we are talking about it, because we have so few women represented in leadership roles, especially in C-suites. And that's that, I guess that's what comes to my mind.
Yeah. Do you think it's possible to reach leadership beyond gender?
Do you know, I spoke to someone recently who told me that change makers and leaders tend to be incredibly optimistic, and that's the motivation in terms of what they do. And so I like to think that we will get there. It may not be in my lifetime, but certainly what I would like to see in my lifetime is significant change and increase.
Yeah, exactly. Now, in your, I mean, you have an extensive experience advocating for gender equality, and I bet that you've likely encountered various manifestations of gender biases. Could you share with us a compelling real life example that illustrates that how gender biases can impact leadership decisions and dynamics, and that maybe at the same time share with us how you see leaders can rise above these biases to create more inclusive environment?
That's a very big question.
I know.
I think there isn't just one particular experiences, or what I know is there's a lot of little experiences, and I think it just sort of adds up, right? I've seen not just my experience myself, but I've seen it, you know, when you hear about, when you see on the news how what's been discussed, what politicians have done, what are happening to leaders in the you know, the bigger brands or listed companies, where I've seen even I was just talking to somebody today about the inequality of pay. So I don't know this, I just wanted to mark this because it was just a quick discussion, but we just have our Qantas, you know, our national airline, the CEO is leaving, retiring, and the new CEO is a former CFO of Qantas. She's been with the company for 30 years, so very much, you know, moved up the ranks, and is a woman, which we're all very excited about, and it turns out that her pay is significantly less than the current CEO or the leaving CEO.
Yeah.
And then I mentioned that it reminded me of a time when there was a newspaper in the Financial Review, something like that, you know, for business newspapers, where they showed the salaries of all the CEOs of the banks, the big banks. And at that time, there's only one woman CEO of, you know, the oldest bank in Australia, actually. And she was, her pay was significantly less than her counterparts, type of thing. So I don't think it's a case like, oh, you could say, you know, but, you know, there's all kinds of reasons people would apply, which I've seen. I'm being very careful with my language because I'm not saying that this is all the time, but these are the typical biases that when it comes to pay, there are reasons to people don't realize unconsciously, subconsciously, that they give them less because there's lesser value one way or another. And also the woman may not necessarily appreciate her self-worth and doesn't negotiate more either.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
there's both, you know, but it goes both ways. And in my book, there was also an example by one of the interviewees who talked about that she had a greater responsibility. She was given amazing role and she had to fight hard to try and get increase in pay and only was told that you should be lucky to have the job. I actually also, on this topic, I know I could keep, you see, you got me started. I could keep going. I just came, I had a lunch I attended and it's called Jean Arno Lunch. Luncheon, and she this has been going on for 30 years, and she passed away when she was 90, and so the lunch is celebrating 90 plus women who were, you know, who have been advocating for women's rights and gender equality. But the reason why she's known for her work, because she was a librarian and she found out that the male cleaners, I'm so sorry, I got my phone ringing, she found out that the male cleaners were getting paid more than the female graduates in the library.
Wow.
Or in the organization.
Yeah. And that still exists. Now you're talking about Australia, right?
Yeah. So I'm talking about Australia, but I've also got some of the examples from similar examples overseas as well. Because when you so that's also covered in the book, is that I looked at all the pay, you know, like saying, like, if you know, if you want data to prove there's no unconscious bias in your company, do compare the salaries between the male workers and the female workers. And then you'll see that literally almost every company in every world has inequality. I know Iceland is obviously are very good in terms of their pay equity, and there's some companies who are making a progress towards that, but literally almost every country in the world have a gap.
And it's interesting when you talk about that, because in Iceland we actually, it's by law, and I think in most countries, Western countries at least, it's by law, but has been by law for decades, but they haven't really done anything about it. But what happened in Iceland was companies need to be certified. They need to go through a process that certifies that it's a gendered equal pay. And what we found out in some cases was there was a lot of work that went into valuing different types of jobs. So I give you an example which I thought was really interesting. So in a company, it's actually an organization, a company here in Iceland that has to do with the power plants. So they had quite a few male workers that were doing label work outdoors. And then they had quite a bit of women that were working like in their canteen, in the cafeteria. And they started to really look at the labor part of this. You know, in the cafeteria, there was quite a lot of labor in holding heavy pots of food and all that was required there. And at the same time, what has happened in all the work that was done outside, that what used to be called here is hard labor, you know, you are doing physically hard work, that has changed because with machinery and technology, that, yes, of course, you're outdoors and that can be tricky, especially often in Iceland. But then they started to look at, are we actually talking about same similar type of thing when it comes to physical heaviness? And there were a lot of things that they discovered as they were going through the process of equal pay. So it's not only about, let's say, that there are a man and a woman working at the canteen and they get equal pay. That was, they didn't worry about that, but it was all of these other things. How do we value our job? How do we see a job? And if it was in the past a very male, we looked at it as a male job, they found out that was no longer the thing. And so I think there's great work that can be done when you start to analyze, you start to go really into all of these jobs, but it's expensive and many companies are not in really into it, but they have to do it. So that's the difference between, I think, many countries that are fighting this. It's like, yeah, we do this, but then all of the unconscious biases kicks in and your brain says, well, this is, you know, he has family to support, like that, you know, which is one thing that you often hear, right? So yeah, it's very, very interesting to see the difference between those two. Does the certification work up to a certain point, but we're not seeing 100% equal pay.
I know.
And today it's more what we are facing over here, just to give you an insight on that, is we are seeing that even though we have parental leave, so both parents take a paid off leave when a child is born, and that has changed enormous amount of just basically how we think. But we are dealing with still there are more women that have that role to go and pick up the child from daycare, and because of that, the time that happens, you know, what happens after our work, that becomes more of the male side. So there are tons of things that we need to think about. So it's interesting and to see Yeah, we made it. We made it up to a certain point. I sometimes feel that even though we've been number one in the world for the past 13, 14 years, it doesn't mean that we've got it. It only means that we're not as bad as the others.
Yeah, do you know? I mean, this kind of like leads me to targets, quotas, and laws. They certainly do help, but it's not enough. And you know, in the examples that you're talking about, like household duties, it's still the case that women carry most of the household duties, and then there is expectation in terms of, you know, who handles and who does family duties, and like you said, picking up childcare and working back late. And I think that I remembered having this conversation 20 years ago where so just, you know, with my husband and I, we're equal partners. He's one of those rare breeds, I have to say. And you know, I joke, I tell people, so this is a story that I wasn't thinking I'll ever get married because I just could not be with somebody who didn't, well, wasn't equal, who didn't expect that or, you know, allow for that. And he was great. However, it was unusual, and so I got a lot of backlash when I wasn't the person to pick up or to be there with my daughter. I've had you know, our doctor, we have separate doctors because I don't like him, and I don't know whether I should say this on the podcast, but he thinks I'm a terrible mother because, and he would, you know, he thinks because I'm not there taking my daughter to medical appointments, my husband does that. And we have our reasons why we do what we do, and we both agreed together how we're going to do this. And it wasn't like he does everything. We literally split everything because of how we can manage and how we juggle. So he doesn't do it all, I don't do it all, we just share. And so he would do some work that would seem like mum should be doing it, and I would do some work that would seem like dad should be doing it, you know. And we don't care about the gender around it. We actually, the thing of what we do is we work out what's practical, what's manageable, and we enjoy the bits that we like. Like I'm out there, you know, with a barbecue. You always see a guy cooking. I love cooking, and I'm the barbecue chef. And every time I'm in the backyard, in the garden cooking in our outdoor kitchen, the neighbors would be quite surprised, like, "Oh, you're cooking." Because they expect to see my husband there. And so, and so, and then also it got me thinking, sorry, going back, I know I'm rambling a little bit, got me thinking about the from 20 years ago, the conversation I had with this wonderful lady who says, you know, Sandra, it's the women at home, it's the mothers, because of how they teach their boys. And so my husband was rare because we all came from an era where the mother was at home doing all of the house stuff. And so there is an expectation that's what's going to happen. And then what I've noticed in the last 20 years with more of the household, yes, women still pick up a lot more, do a lot more of the work, but there isn't an expectation that she has to stay at home and do it all. And that men have seen come from a household where they have working mothers, they see their fathers being you know, more active in household duties, doing, you know, everything, like all the bits and pieces, so they're exposed to that. And then these newer, younger generation of men are actually taking more and more of an active role at home, and also appreciating and allowing the women to, not allowing is a word, but seeing it's okay, like seeing it's actually perfectly normal if she wants to have a career, if she wants to stay at home. You know, whatever the choices are, that they're working out together, and rather than just saying, "Well, you're a woman, you should do this. You're a man, you should do this," type of thing.
So it is changing, but you're still being judged.
Oh yes, oh yes.
You're still being
That's the
judged.
unconscious bias coming in.
That's exactly. And that leads me to how do you, when you are talking and when you are, in your talks, in your programs, what do you say to leaders who want to change this, who want to become what I call a leader that can lead beyond genders? What strategies or habits. I always think this is a habit or a ritual that we're dealing with. How can they change that, in your opinion?
So that's a very good question. And when I was interviewing all the business leaders who do have women well represented in boards and C-suites, it didn't matter the size of the business. It didn't matter which industry, whether it's male dominated or not. So like speaking to technology, mining, you know, what else was there? Different financial services as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't matter whether they were a founding CEO or recruited in. Mm-hmm. And they made the necessary changes. It was all of the commonality across all of them that did it was that they actually believed, they actually wanted to happen.
Yeah.
They would wanted to see gender balance. And so they would push for that. And then they said, that is the vision.
Mm-hmm.
We're putting into a strategic plan. I mean, different CEOs did it differently, but that's kind of like the steps that I put together in summarizing the different strategy. And that is, it helps if you have a vision that you put into a strategic plan so that everybody knows, the whole company believes in your vision.
Mm-hmm.
You empower your leadership team
mm-hmm.
to roll it out, to implement the policy, and then you keep reporting the metrics and supporting them throughout that way. And it helps if you have the support of the board as well, especially the chair who would support the vision and commit to it as well. And those are the key elements that I see that has worked for the ones that I have interviewed and what they did in order to make the change, because not all of them start off with a balanced board or balanced leadership team. They actually came in, so it was very male dominated,
mm-hmm.
and then they put in the strategies to how to change that.
Yeah. So basically, the number one thing is the will. Where there is a will, there is a way.
Exactly. That's pretty much it.
Mm, exactly. You're an expert in biases. I'm curious. As women, I think both of us have, in one way or another, experienced a bias against us, that we are expected to do something because we're women. What about the biases that we hold against men?
Oh, it happens too. You know, it's both sides. There is expectation that men can do things and women can't, you know.
Yeah.
There is the expectation that, you know, there are also, I was talking about this not long ago, women leaders, it's challenging being in a leadership role because firstly, you have the double standard, you know, if you're too confident, it's seen as negative, too bossy, you know, all that stuff. And it also sometimes it's the women who work for you that may not support you either, mm-hmm. and they're extra critical of your abilities.
Yeah.
And so because there is a recognition of how men operate, and it's just really the bias, and it's not intentional, it's not malicious most of the time.
Exactly.
It's just that they feel, you know, generally people feel comfortable when they're used to the framework of seeing these behaviors and say, I feel comfortable with this when I have a male boss behaving in this way. I don't feel comfortable when I have a female boss behaving in that way.
Yeah.
And so, you know, again, I'm generalizing, but that bias is really, it's because of so much of our conditioning, what we've been exposed to, what's been kind of like instilled into us. And until we're aware of it, while we have these sort of attitude and while we're behaving towards people that way or towards leaders, then we realize, okay, we have a certain lens and we need to change that. And so so I've got that unconscious bias personality test, which doesn't say whether you have it or don't have it. It's really what type of personality around it, so that you can, you know, change some elements or if you want to improve.
So when you take me through that, so when you go through the that test, what is the outcome?
So there's 9 personality types, and from completing the test, it will tell you which of the 9 that you have, belong to, so to speak. And that will tell you, you can't, even though you are very supportive of the gender and you align, there's different degrees, and it actually works out. Maybe you're also biased in other ways, type of thing. So it goes through all that to the range where you're just so fixed in your traditional settings that you don't believe women are capable of, being in leadership roles or being in non-gender, like different gender roles and that sort of stuff. So it's a range, and most people, I think, and I like to call this unconscious bias, it's unintentional bias,
I agree with you.
because it's just, it's so instilled in us, and we all have it. I have it as well.
I'm loaded
And
with
yeah,
it.
and so it's just, it's, it the test is really is to help to be aware of it and realize that that you're naturally doing things when we just didn't realize you were doing it.
Yeah, exactly. So is the test designed for any gender to take, or is it
Any gender.
particularly any gender? So, and does it show us both our biases against women and as well as against men, or is it
It's just, it's more about how you're towards gender. So it's not saying you're very biased towards women. It's not saying you're very biased towards men.
No, okay,
It's
yeah.
your attitude towards gender.
And how, where can we access this?
Oh, so it's the website is bias. Ivantest.com.
Nice.
It's
Okay.
free.
It's
It's free as
free.
well.
Yeah.
Yep, it's
Okay.
free.
Perfect.
And it's only 25 questions, so it's not too. It doesn't take too long to complete it. But it's better that you answer it honestly and focus on it. And then at the end, there's a report that you can go through.
Brilliant. So go to biased-test.com to find out how biased you are.
Yes,
Oh,
that's
la
right.
la. Yeah. I want to go into, I want to start, well, actually go into your our homes and leadership, our biased thinking. How our gender roles are very often very in a box. This is what you do, this is what I do, all of these things that, which is just as it is. I'm curious, in Australia, we talked about things about cooking and taking care of the family, but I'm interested in things like parental leave.
Parental
How,
leave.
yeah, where are you? What's happening there in Australia?
Yeah, so we're late. I think we only were, I think we were one of 2 OECD countries that didn't have parental leave for a long time. And that only came through in the last 10 years. Just over 10 years ago, I believe. And I should know because, we were lobbying for it. And it's applied. So it's 6 weeks, but then what there is the government component, and then there is the company who may want to add more, and it's in terms of supporting it. What we're seeing and what's been going on is that more and more companies are offering parental leave for men. In the companies as well, and it doesn't have to be just for the primary carer as the term. So the primary carer can be man or woman, but who's the primary carer will generally get the benefits from the government, I believe. The what there's been a lot of discussions lately And so it's still a struggle. Like it's been a real struggle for men to take up parental leave because there's a stigma around it, and other men are not supportive of that. And what now want to see more and more men taking it, and the conversation is the men are worried about it affecting their career if they take time off to care for their child. Similar concerns of what women would have as well. So I'm not saying the stigma's gone, but before was very much about the stigma. Now it's worried about the impact on their career with that. And so there is a lot of encouragement to try and help men navigate and take up, because it's good. It's good for both parents, either parents who, you know, spend time in the early years and connecting, you know, with their child, and you know how tough all those early years are. So we're a bit behind. Are they initially, you know, from the rest of the world? But what I'm seeing is there is, you know, there's very much open discussion and very much encouragement, especially with the larger companies, to encourage men to take the lead.
Do you think companies, since this is your, sounds like a challenge to get companies to not only offer that, but almost like it's mandatory. Here we, you know, if a company has the culture that in our company, when you have a child, it's mandatory. And you look at it from, not from the parent's perspective, but from the child's perspective.
Yeah.
The child has the right to grow up during those first months or a year or 18 months or whatever the amount of time is, to spend time with both parents. And in our company, that is our role. Do you think, is that way out of the box for the culture in Australia?
Yeah. I don't know we'll ever get to that. Maybe we will. Because I think mandatory is something Australians in particular are not fond of. So when we went through COVID and we had mandatory lockdowns, masks and things like that, and you saw what happened in the US, which is, you know, so I think this culture, Australia is a little bit more compliant when you look compared to the US.
So probably if it would be, we encourage both parents to take a leave off, and in our culture we even give a bonus to those who do, that might be a different thing.
Could be, yeah, that would be certainly. There's various ways of doing it, and I think what it is it's very much the government will say here's the package, here's the support, and it's up to you if you want to take it, and the company will do the same, and then but not make it mandatory for them to do it. No. So the you know, definitely government mandatory stuff is just for things like that, it's not culturally sort of something that's accepted. Saying that though, what I wanted to say though is there is the time taken, you know, it might be 1 week or 2 weeks, you know, for men, and then you know, longer for women, type of thing. So that's what's, and even 1 or 2 weeks to take paternity leave.
What do they do then? What would what happens to the child after those those hours? I'm not even going, it sounds like a couple of hours. What happens to the child afterwards? Who takes care of the child?
The mother does most of the time, and then that's when you enlist the help of parents and family members to help.
And so she quits her job? Does he get?
Oh yes, yeah. That's the thing. So
I'm
so
amazed that you even have children in Australia.
Well, I mean, this is the challenge, and for a woman who wants to build up a career, it is harder, much harder, when you're going through the childbearing age, and trying to, and it's a juggle. It's like you either choose one or another. I actually interviewed, and I won't name names, a CEO of one of the major financial institution.
Yeah.
And when she had her children, her husband quit his job
yeah.
to stay at home.
Yeah.
And so that she could pursue her career.
Yeah.
And so that's the challenge over here. And what's, you know, with the economy where it is, it is expected, like, in order to just to live and pay for very expensive things, country living costs mm-hmm. over here, you need both parents to work.
Yeah, yeah. The same thing over here, for sure, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just I also wanted to add, though, what I'm noticing with, because of the challenge of talent, the companies are, again, very blanket rule, but there is a lot of discussion of the companies trying to find ways to attract employees and keeping them. And so there are, you know, they might have more attractive paternity leave package.
Well, I just gave you an idea of a very attractive way to do things.
I know. Yeah.
So to the audience in Australia who are thinking, this nuthead from Iceland is just giving us insights into something that is impossible, I'm just going to point out that it is very possible to do this. And I can also say, I think that when it became a legislation that both parents could take a leave off, and actually today we have, I think it's 12 months and it's equally divided between parents. And I think either parent can take 1 month from the other. So that means either the mother is then 7 months and yeah. father five or the opposite. And yeah. yes, and I think most likely in most cases it's the mother that takes from the dad still today. But what I want to make as a point is when that happened, what that changed everything when a person was applying for a job, a position, and they were in that age of starting a family or growing a family. That changed the biases, that changed the script completely. Because nowadays it is, when you're at that age and you're applying for a job, you are, regardless of your gender, going to take time off.
Yeah.
So it becomes just a totally different way of thinking yeah. this. And I want to encourage the businesses, the forefront businesses, the organizations in Australia, to take that step and be the leader in this. Because talking about getting the right talent in, you are missing out on talent. Australia, come on. Yes.
Look, I think it's really good to see that sort of impact. And I actually would like to learn more about it, of how that has really helped change the tide, and see whether that could be replicated over here.
Yeah, I think politicians can do a lot. I think businesses can do a whole lot. I think it's just a decision. And and it needs, you need to encourage. Of course you need courage. You're doing something different. You're doing something that has not been done before. You're doing something that, you know, we put it into the culture box. This is not part of our culture. Well, you change that box.
Yeah.
You expand that box. You just do that for the higher good. Because in Australia, I know their educational system is phenomenal. And you're educating women and men, and then you're only using a part of it? I mean, come on. Yeah. You don't need to be an economist to see that doesn't really add up.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's not even just the initial year. It's also the childcare. So there's a lot of discussion around the childcare, and childcare is not free. No. But there's, you know, childcare that, you know, for that would also help bring more women into the workforce as well. Yeah. I was going to ask you, though, with the change, though, do you see more women in leadership roles because of it?
Yes. When it comes to the, it's really interesting how that turns out, because in the public sector, I would say we are seeing, without a doubt, 50-50, even 60-40 benefiting women.
Excellent.
Yeah. When it comes to the private sector, it's another story. It's another story. And here's what I've been saying is one of the things that we're looking at is very often, yeah, women are in high positions and then they leave that position for whatever reason that is. And very often you see that they just don't want to go in that again. And well, one of the things that has been a big talk over here is the third shift, that mental shift, that traditional thing. And we're going back to the stereotyping. As a woman, your role is to look, think, remember all the birthdays, remember all the doctor appointments, remember all the, making the lunch packs, doing that, doing this. So now they're not only doing the leadership roles, and even though, someone might take care of the cleaning, it might be their spouse, whatever that is, it's not exactly cleaning and cooking today. That seems to be quite equal, but it's that third shift, that mental shift that is lies on the top of you as your responsibility. And of course, I think we a lot of it has to a lot of it can change by having a different type of conversations and just look at what sort of a conversation are you having at your kitchen table. That because that means that's where it starts.
Well, I completely understand,
Yeah.
because I know that it might just been, I've only got one daughter, and the schedule, like making sure you get a notice, like, oh, we need to get a costume, or if
Yeah.
they don't give enough
Who
notice, or
is doing that? Yeah, I know. And sometimes, and we tell ourselves because we're mastered in this, we tell ourselves, well, I kind of like that as well. This is part of me being a mom and all of these things. I think we just need to be aware that we are holding on to something that might not be very equal for our partner then. Are we giving him the opportunity to be part of this? Are we having the conversation of saying, I love doing that, but I would really, really appreciate if we can take that, you we can share that load as well.
I think it is about sharing the load. And in general, again, very, very much a generalizing statement that because we feel that when we can do a much better job, we tend to do it all. And so in order to allow to share the load, you have to accept lesser quality.
Yeah, exactly, and that's that comes the responsibility comes to us. Yeah, it's true. This has been so interesting, Sandra. I want to just one last question for leaders who believe that the world could be a better place. If we allow people to step in to their highest version, to be themselves, to be valued for their skills, for their talents, for their knowledge, for their experience, what would you say, like to say to them to at this point to help them? Because I know this is challenging. What would you like to say to them as a final word? What can they do to keep them?
Don't that, that they don't should, they don't have to feel that they have to do this all by themselves. Like, you know what we said earlier, if there's a will, there's a power. Start off with the will. If you have the will, you know that there are ways to enlist support and help, and you need that. But as long as you have the will, it is absolutely possible and achievable.
Perfect. Where there is a will, there is a way. With that,
Exactly.
I want to thank you for very interesting conversations and a helpful conversation when it comes to me writing the book and putting this all together. How can we change
Love
the
it.
world? Thank you so much, Natarupa.
Well, thank you for having me, and I really enjoyed this conversation with you too.